So, just to tell you a little bit about myself, my name's Preet Buller. I'll just wait for the gents to find a seat. Thank you. My name's Preet Buller. I work for a company called BMT HiQ Sigma. I'm a managing consultant. I joined BMT Defense Services in 2001 as a mechanical engineer and progressed on to risk and safety management for BMT ISIS in 2004. I then joined BMT HiQ Sigma as a managing consultant in 2006. And in this period, I have provided expertise in program and risk management, project controls, assurance to numerous defense equipment and support type CAT A programs. The group that, just to give you an introduction about the group that I belong to, BMT is a leading international design, engineering, science, and risk management consultancy with a reputation for engineering maritime excellence. The group was formed from an amalgamation of research and technology organizations and now operates worldwide in defense, transport, government, energy, and environmental sectors. The company that I actually work for, where are a number of companies that belong to the group. I work for BMT HiQ Sigma, so does my colleague Tony Purpuri. It's an operating company within the group. We established ourselves as a company in 2003. Our real bread and butter is combining expertise in program management and systems engineering to bring about organizational transformation. We're a growing company. With over 100 employees. I remember when we were just 20. You can probably spot me there somewhere. I think I stand out. Any guesses to where Tony is? You are in there somewhere. I think that's where you are, possibly. The company I work for have a strong reputation in defense with diversification strands into government, energy and transport markets within the UK and overseas. Just to give you an idea about what our core capabilities are, I wouldn't go through each one of these sections. They're pretty self-explanatory, but as far as the Scout SV project is concerned, the capability we provide to the team sits in the project controls and EVM box. My presentation today is divided up into three parts. The first part is giving you an introduction to what SV Scout is all about. Just give you a brief introduction of what that project is. The second part will be describing about what it is that we do for that project. What's the EVM scope support? And the third part really is about sharing what challenges I have experienced in this project. Before we go on, I would like to gauge the level of EVM expertise we have here, so that at least perhaps maybe at coffee time I know which direction I need to walk, and perhaps maybe which ones I need to, who I need to liaise with. But anyway, so please, by show of hands, let's start at the bottom up and make our way up. How many of you fall in category D today? Great. How about C? Okay. What about B? That's great stuff. Welcome. Welcome all of you. And what about A? Right, so this is where I need to... I got my eyes on you. So what's Scout Specialist Vehicle all about? This is the Army's highest priority new equipment program, having the biggest single order for fighting vehicles in 30 years. It's a £3.5 billion contract, which was signed on the 3rd of September last year at General Dynamics in the presence of our Prime Minister. The project will deliver vehicles that have been designed with the highest levels of protection, mobility, and crew comfort for our British Army. The Scout will replace an increasingly outdated and tactically undeployable fleet, which has reached its operational capacity. It's an expected total of 589 vehicles, scheduled for an initial operating capability for 2018. The Scout is a tracked armored vehicle equipped with the state-of-the-art intelligence, surveillance, target acquisition, and reconnaissance technologies, what we term as ISTAR, which is effective across a number of operations, including rapid intervention, major combat operations, as well as enduring peacekeeping and peace enforcement. It is armed with a 40mm cannon, effective in all weathers and terrain, and a tremendous amount of human factors have actually gone into the design of the turret, which integrates this with the base platform. Scout will be the first fully digitized army vehicle. Sorry, I beg your pardon. I'm pressing the wrong key. Just go back. It would be the first digitized army vehicle, meaning that its crew will be able to use imagery, data, and other information live to gather intelligence on the target ahead of advancing troops. So just to give you an idea about those of you who know or don't know, it's not very clear on here, but that's the cannon. That bit there is the turret. And what that's sitting on is the base platform. Just a little bit about the program in terms of where we are. Program-wise, we are at the back end of demonstration phase and moving on to manufacturing phase. The program consists of two blocks of capability. I'll try and be as brief as possible here. I'm just conscious of the sensitivity of this, so my tongue is pretty much tied in terms of how much detail I'm able to delve into here. But the first block consists of four roles. We've got the Scout, so we've got the program that's actually called Scout, but one of the variants of this vehicle is actually called the flagship Scout, and that's with the 40mm cannon. We've got a protected mobility recce support, which is our second variant, and we've got two equipment support variants, repair and recovery. The second block consists of what we call as a special to role, and that consists of two variants, command and control and engineer reconnaissance. And I may have lost some of you already, but my next slide will probably give you a better idea of what I'm actually talking about. So just to give you an idea again, we've got six variants. I've put three variants on here. So the way the design of this platform is, you've got a single base platform design that is common to all the variants. So if you imagine that you've got pieces of kit that needs to go onto that, that's what we term as the variant. Now, I'll run through what these pieces of funky kit is and in terms of what sort of technology that goes into that. But we've got a very simple modular design, and that allows the Army then to use a single base platform to go back and change whatever kit that they want to go in. Pretty much just sits on top of that, so you can reuse that base platform. The variants from left to right, so we've got a command and control, which essentially is a mobile battlefield headquarters. The next one is the engineering variant, which will carry specialist engineering equipment. And by that, I mean a specially specced digging equipment. It may carry a spade and shovel or two. The next one on the right is the troop carrier variant, which provides specialist troop support. The one on the left is the recovery variant, designed to recover damaged vehicles. And if that gets damaged, I think we're basically stuffed. But the one in the middle, any guesses? That's the repair and tow vehicle, designed to carry out repairs and tow if necessary. The final and key vehicle type in the program is actually the flagship Scout reconnaissance variant, which is equipped with the Lockheed Martin supplied turret and fitted with a new French cannon. Each one of these variants have their own schedule, earned value activities within a single performance management measurement baseline. Each variant has their own critical design reviews. Each variant have got their own trials, training, so on and so forth. So I'm just trying to give you a demonstration of how complex this program is against a single PMB. So in terms of our support, what is it that the tech team at SV Scout, the MOD, what's their requirement upon us? They want to know how the project is progressing. What has the contractor achieved with the money we've spent so far? There are a number of contractors, but I wouldn't complicate this any further, so we'll just stick with the prime contractor. What is the true outturn cost going to be? Can the mod trust the data in the report supplied by the contractor? Do we have confidence in the contractor's delivery? And if not, then what are their get well plans? What are their recovery actions? So how do we go about meeting these requirements? This is where I come in. We're only a small team. We're about two of us on the shop floor, on the floor plate. And to meet that requirement, we have developed an EVMS system that integrates with the existing Scout risk and schedule processes. We've tried to do that. I'm not saying that we're there, but we've tried to do that, which I will go into more detail later on about how we go about sort of interfacing, how we went about interfacing risk and schedule. We ensure that the system is in place to capture accurate costs. Although we have a fixed price contract with the prime, having an accurate collection of the costs provides us with a view of where the money is being spent, and more importantly, if there are any resource issues. I think an example of this is probably the CPI index. We know it's a fixed price contract, so we're not too worried about any profit margins in this case. But I'm quite keen on the CPI because, as we know, experts, greater than one, it may indicate a shortage of resources because the money's not being spent as we planned. And I think that's what I'm sort of looking at as far as the prime contract is concerned. If we've got a group of people working on a particular aspect, survivability or signatures, whatever, then the CPI is going to tell me whether they're actually burning the money that they plan to spend. We generate SPI CPI indices, targeting the most significant variances and challenging the contractor's variance reports. That's my bread and butter. I challenge their reports. That's exactly what I do. That's what I'm there for. I want to make sure that what it is that they're actually telling me is realistic, and I take that and I go back to our tech teams and I then tell them, what do you think about that? And so my role is pretty much on the fence, really, and trying to satisfy both sides. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. We also develop monthly EVM reports to inform board-level discussions, which are informed by a combination of estimate to complete, estimate at completion, and TCPI calculations to help us identify and manage problems before they occur. When required, we also make comparisons with schedule risk analysis modeling and EV forecast schedules. This is where it gets really interesting. I've got a separate slide on that to tell you a little bit more about how we go about doing it and why. It's all about gaining confidence. Putting the requirement in a context diagram, I like context diagrams. It just puts things in perspective in terms of inputs and outputs. So it just shows you a different view on how we go about meeting this requirement. So looking at the inputs, we contractually receive an EV data drop. This is contractual deliverables from the contractor, and it consists of the CPR's 1-5 reports. And we also get a dashboard from them that gives us what their key performance indicators are against that. I then interface this information with the schedule and risks We assess the variances against thresholds, and we monitor against progress against the PMB. What's really key is that I then verify this information with my tech teams. So once we receive the data, I then have a one-to-ones with my tech teams to try and accomplish against what they feel is the realistic situation as far as they see it, against what the contractor is actually telling us. Okay, and that includes scope, schedule, cost. If they've got any issues in terms of why they think some of the activities are marked as 100% complete, why the contractor thinks it's 100% complete, but the tech teams think perhaps, maybe not, I need to know that. So that's what I do when we get that monthly data. It's just to verify that in terms of percent complete and physical percent complete as well, and whether they really think or we really think that they've actually earned the value that they claim that they have earned. Once we do that, this allows me to generate a series of outputs. So I have an updated EVM tool at the end of that. I generate an EVM report. That includes any tracking EV progress, any SPI, CPI breaches that we've identified, any variance analysis that we've actually done. But it also allows me to generate a list of queries. And the list of queries comes with the one-to-ones that I've had with the tech teams against the data that we've actually received from the contractors. We've got a formal process in place where we generate review forms every month. Every time we get a deliverable, there's a review form to acknowledge, A, that we've received the data, but also we may have some concerns with that. All that information supplements our monthly progress review. So it's a challenge, but we manage to do that ahead of that monthly progress review so that whoever's attending that review has got sufficient information to ask the right questions. For me, the reason why I've circled that in red is that is absolutely critical, because we could get the data and we could push the output reports out, but if we don't check it and verify it and spend good quality time to try and understand why is it that they think they've earned the value, why is it that they think that that activity is 100% complete, if we don't do that groundwork, then I don't know what I'm doing there at supporting the Mod team. The next slide is an extract of our EVM tool, which Tony, my colleague, will cover in a bit more detail later. So we receive data for each one of the control accounts highlighted in yellow. So for example, design delivery, software integration and trials, system delivery, electronic architecture, software integration, program management, and so on and so forth. So the point is that the highlighted bits, each one of those are control accounts and have CAMs allocated to that. So we receive EV data for each one of those control accounts highlighted in yellow. And the tool provides us the functionality to drill down into work packages and activities, which we can then link back to the delivery schedule. So if we want to know for a particular activity that value has been earned, we can use that activity and trace it back to the delivery schedule to find out what's their percent complete, what's the logic behind that, and what activity is that activity driving? What milestones are those activities driving? Are they on the critical path, for example? We always make sure that the contractor allocates a control account to one CAM. All CAs are mapped to a CAM. This, of course, allows traceability, ensuring that the cost in a CA plan equals the cost in the CA RAM, and therefore the total sum of the scope should equal the PMB. For those of you who like color and process flowcharts, this is a process flowchart that describes how we interface EVM with risk and schedule. I won't go through each one, but the key processes are, so I apologize for the detail on here, but it's not very clear. So we get monthly drops. So we get an EV data drop, and we get a dashboard drop. When that drop comes in, we analyze and conduct assurance checks. We identify the CAMs in breach of SPIs and CPIs. We then ensure that corrective actions have been identified to address the variance. And we produce a monthly EVM report, which then informs the MPR in terms of decision making. But we go a little bit further than that. We check to see if, for those activities that are in breach, are they on their critical path? And if they are on the critical path, have they got risks identified against them? So if they are in breach, then I'm quite keen to look at what corrective actions they've actually addressed to bring that breach back. And if they happen to be on the critical path, and we've got risks attached to that, then I'd like to know what those risks are and what risk mitigations they have in place to address that risk. And so we've got two sets of responsive actions here. So we've got responsive actions that they should be doing to bring that SPI back in the green. But we've also got some corrective actions that address the risk as well. So I'd like to look at both of them and see perhaps maybe there could be a risk or they could be missing a mitigation that would address that risk. Or on the other hand, there could be a duplication of actions that they're actually doing, and perhaps maybe it's already addressed in the risk. That's all we do in terms of interfacing, and I think that's pretty much everything that we can do, although I put my hand up, and we've got experts on the table, so I'll be really keen to know how else we could possibly do that better. It's a closed loop, so anything that generates out from that in terms of any variances, any actions that should be there that are not in the risks, they go back into our queries report. The queries report then go back to the contractors. I sit down with the contractors face to face and we go through that. This is just an example of some of the estimate at completion and estimate to complete calculations we use based on our most current schedules and assumptions. For those of you that need reminding, EAC is the forecasted cost of project. Sorry, should I stop there? ETC is the forecast of how much more money we'll need to spend to complete the project. How many of you, just by show of hands, use EAC, ETC calculations in earnest? Does it work? Does it give you an idea about where we need to be, perhaps, maybe, in terms of cost? Well, we use EACs, which can be calculated and analyzed at any level of the work breakdown structure. I think what's key on this slide here is the choice of EAC calculations we use. And we tend to use the ETC budget at completion minus the earned value divided by a performance indicator. Now, the reason for that is because we like to take into account our past performance. I have a fairly good view about what the trends are in terms of SPI. So, you know, and the assumptions that are behind there. So the current variances will continue to be present in the future. I've got an idea for that, and that's why we use these calculations. We don't tend to use CPI that often, but it tends to be the SPI factored in. We also use a forecast schedule completion estimates. I really like this. That's because my background is scheduling, planning, and so on and so forth, as well as risk. But I like to see where it is that they are at in terms of their contractual date. So I'll just run through this as an example. Sorry. So we have an operating milestone for system CDR, critical design review. And we expected that to be complete by 3rd of December 2014. That's the forecast completion. The start of the contract date, or contract effective date, was 1st of July 2010. But the forecasted duration is approximately 53 months, taking both those dates into account. And the cumulative scheduled performance index in that period, cumulatively, is 0.95. If you factor that in, that gives me 56 months. And that tells me that it's a 3-month increase to the forecasted duration of 53 months. And so somehow the EV is telling me that my system CDR is going to be in March 15 instead of December 2014. So what do we do with all these estimates? Well, what do I do with it? I plot them against a milestone tracker. I've got a copy of that here. Please don't take into account any of these dates. They're completely meaningless. Please, this is yours. Thank you. So we use this tracker to enable comparisons with operational milestones, contractual milestones, scheduled risk analysis, and EV forecasting estimates. I have a one-page A3 with everything on it. Okay? So I've got your contractual dates. That's your black triangle there. I then have the operational dates, and that's the contractor's view of how they plan to achieve the contract dates. Okay? So the black triangle for me is key, absolutely key. There's a lot that holds on to that contractual date, because if the contractor does not meet that, we're in breach, they're in breach, we put them in breach, and that's where taxpayers' money gets all sensitive and all that sort of. But anyway, so we've got operational milestones. Now, that tends to vary because of perhaps there'll be some tests that may have failed and so on and so forth. But I like to see all that on a single page. And I like to see how it dances across that, because it gives me an idea about what's happening there and perhaps maybe where we need to address some of the actions and ask the right questions. So just to give you an idea, so on here, my EV forecast is telling me perhaps maybe we're just outside of their operational milestone, but just inside of their contractual date. But perhaps maybe the SRA modeling is telling me that we're not going to meet the contractual milestone. We're going to be worried then. And so we want to go back perhaps maybe and look at the critical network or the risk network, and perhaps maybe identify what is it that's driving that out? Is it a risk? Are we concerned about that? Do we need to be? So on and so forth. But these are all the kind of questions that we need to sort of, you know, look at. I mean, I'm not saying that that's the case. Perhaps maybe the SRA modeling all tends to be on this side of that track. But then sometimes we expect